Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show with FM Talk 106.5. 34 minutes after the hour on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106 is the text line. And I see a bunch of appreciative text about the Phyllis story there. So, but enjoy it. We only do it a couple of times a year. And new listeners are often like, well, what's he talking about? What's he talking about? But you got to hear it here. For once, you'll hear it here again. Those of you that have been longtime listeners know the story already. Let's get to our next guest. He represents the second congressional district, but now soon to represent the first congressional district. Congressman Barry Moore of Enterprise is with us. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff, we are doing good. How are you, sir?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for making time for us. Well, and you and I are talking over the break, but, a very, very, all the reports seem very ominous, and we got a kind of a fork in the road for the current speaker, Mike Johnson, about this foreign aid package. From your perspective, what do you think is going on here?
Well, I think there's a divide. I mean, 100% of the Democrats are for far more money than Ukraine. I don't know of any that aren't, but within our own party, there's a lot of us who are tired of the money to Ukraine and the spending in Ukraine, and so I think our party is divided on that particular issue. And look, there's arguments for both sides of that. But then you've got the issue with Israel being attacked by Iran. And many of us are saying, hey, we need to step up and help Israel. We haven't done anything for them. And we passed a bill some months back that we had offset spending, you know, where we took the money from the IRS and gave it to Israel for defense before the attacks even happened. And Schumer and those guys wouldn't move that. So now Schumer and them's looking to give more money to Ukraine, more money to Israel, some money to Taiwan, I think, is part of the deal. There's just a lot of money they're wanting to spend. And so our party's kind of divided right now, and that's the issue. That's the fork in the road. We're trying to figure out how do we move forward and address the issues that are pressing. And at the same time, many of us would like to see us at least take a look at the border security in the U.S.
Well, is Mike Johnson's speakership in danger, as some say it is?
You know, I don't know. I've talked to some of my friends and many of them in the media that have been featured in the media lately. And a lot of the motion to vacate, I think, Jeff, was just to motivate Mike to move and to do the right thing and to stick to the agreements, you know, that he made when he came in as speaker and the tenets that he offered, you know. And so I think probably in a lot of ways, I don't know that removing him 7 months from an election right now is beneficial because, you know, an idea without a position in elected office is just an idea. But once you become elected, it becomes policy. And so we have to be very careful. We've got a lot of great ideas, but if we don't win the House come November, if the Democrats take control of the House, then in fact, Trump is president, but you've got the Democrats, they'll be impeaching him and it'll be a fight, you know. Hopefully we'll have the Senate as well. But I think we have to play the long game in November. I don't see the border getting secure between now and November. They do not need more laws. We've got some funding apparatus that we can do to force the administration. But the problem, Jeff, is that until Donald Trump is in the White House and reverses some of these executive orders, border security is going to be slow coming.
Well, and let's talk about the motion to vacate. What it looked like to me, and I think you and I had talked about this, that it was sort of a brushback pitch from Marjorie Taylor Greene. She was like, hey, what do we have to do to get your attention here? This isn't what you're supposed to be doing as a Republican speaker. You're supposed to be cutting deals with Democrats and any of that. And everybody's like, oh, here we go again. Here we go again. But, I mean, it was pretty clear. I mean, it didn't look like it was, I would say it was serious, but it wasn't serious in that it wanted to actually oust Speaker Johnson necessarily. I mean, maybe. But where it got really interesting was Representative Massey jumping on board, who's, I think, a very serious, cerebral guy. And to me, that makes it, whatever you want to call it, but at least more concerning.
Yeah. When Thomas did that did kind of raise the eyebrows here in D.C. because, like you said, he's not playing emotional. He's just thinking through the game and from a strictly political I don't want to get in Thomas's head. He's a smart guy. He doesn't play the emotion game, man. He plays the logic. And for some reason, when he came out a couple of days ago and said he was joining that, I think that did raise eyebrows here in Washington. And of course, I think there's been people say, hey, hold up a minute. But if Mike seems to be, and I talk about the Speaker Johnson, he seems to be doubling down on, I'm going to do it, and we'll see what happens. So, yeah, it's interesting times, to say the least, my friend, interesting times, and we'll see what happens going forward. But we've done some good things on sanctions for Iran this week, locking down the $10 billion that Biden made available. We've done some good things. We're trying to get a handle on some of the finances of the Iranian leaders. We passed that. Certainly some oil sanctions against Iran, but to me, I'm just tired of playing both sides of this thing in sense of, we're buying oil from Iran or we don't have sanctions on them, but we're giving money to Israel. And then there's relief for maybe the Gaza Strip in this package. That's horrible. We did it in Ukraine. We bought oil from Russia and we funded Ukraine. And it seems like every time the American taxpayer gets left holding the bag for these endless wars and there's no game plan to finish this thing out. And so that worries me a little bit. And I think that's what Thomas is starting to say. Wait a minute. Some of these, especially recently, some of this legislation he's trying to push through with this attack on Israel from Iran that the speaker's trying to drive, I think is causing Thomas and many of us to step back and go, wait a minute now. Marjorie said this, but man, you really need to get with the program.
Congressman, what's driving Republicans on Ukraine? Now, Democrats, I think it's a tricky question. I honestly think there's some kind of philosophical belief that Russia and Vladimir Putin are the source of all evil in the world, or all evil in the world, and we must combat it. But Republicans, I mean, even our colleagues in the Alabama, your colleagues in the Alabama delegation, don't. I mean, they're willing to at least be open to that idea. Where does that come from? What is driving this impulse within some Republicans to want to pony up and give more money to Ukraine?
Yeah, I think if you step back and take a look, obviously they worry about Russia succeeding and eventually attacking one of our NATO allies. I think that maybe moving to Poland or something. I think that does drive it a little bit in a sense that we can't have Putin expanding, going back to the former Soviet Union and trying to take these countries in Europe that are allies and part of NATO. And so in some ways, I think that drives it. And honestly, man, there's a military industrial complex up here that's never seen a war they didn't like, and it seems like they just want to fund that. And, I don't know what drives some of our Republicans, because my thing is, where's the oversight? I mean, if you're at $113 billion we've sent to this young democracy, we know they're corrupt. I mean, that's where Burisma was. With very little oversight, I just don't see the appetite just to keep sending money with no oversight while our border's wide open. Because, I say all the time, if you're in an airplane and man, the oxygen mask drop, the first thing you do is put yours on and then take care of the young passengers with you. If America's not healthy, nobody in the world is going to be safe. And right now, we've got a wide open border. We're spending money. We're borrowing money from people we don't necessarily need to borrow from and send it to countries with no oversight. And I don't think that plays out well for the future of this country if we actually don't take care of our own people, take care of our border, put America first, get healthy here before we try to be the police around the world. It just seems to be that never-ending 100 billion here, billion there, whatever it is. Man, that's going to be tough on the American people to pay that. And I think for us to see the Republicans, some of them going along, I don't know if it's just the fear of what Putin might do, or like I said, this military-industrial complex. And honestly, I think, Jeff, if they would look at this supplemental to Ukraine as a way to resupply some of our stuff that we've sent to Ukraine rather than just more money for Ukraine, it might be more palatable among some of us. I don't know that I would support it, but I think that would still make it more palatable instead of saying, yeah, we're just sending money to Ukraine, saying, hey, no, this is to replace arms and systems and weapons. Some of the maybe older stuff that we've already sent, that makes sense to us in some ways. But right now, it's just like blank check to Ukraine to this SecDef who has done a horrible job since he's been there.
Joined by Congressman Barry Moore here on the program. Let's move on to the other part of the foreign aid package. But Israel, I mean, I think there's a real fear, and your colleague Jerry Carl and I were talking about this earlier this week, but I think there's a real fear of the Biden administration that this sort of escalates and turns into something, and then they're not really – this is an administration that's not really equipped politically – to take a side on this because they're left flank, and some of these are your colleagues in the House are just opposed to Israel, whatever reason. We could figure that out later, but they just are opposed to Israel. And then I think, you know, well, some of the biggest Zionists in D.C. and on the East Coast are Democrats. I mean, there's a real schism in the Democratic Party over this. And the Biden administration doesn't really have a good way to play both sides. That's why I'm so underwhelmed by the Biden response to what happened with Israel and that attack.
Yeah, and it is truly amazing when you, and like you said, a lot of the people who are Israel supporters are Democrat donors. And so, but then you got the squad within the Democrat Party. And you see that play out. I just, you know, it's interesting because I don't know that this administration is in a good position on any foreign issues, but certainly when you start looking at that and how they manage through this process, because it's almost like now Biden doesn't even want Israel to strike back for the Iran attacks a few weeks ago, or I guess it was about a week ago now, but it's almost like they're just trying to tie Israel's hands and Netanyahu and his ability to defend his own country. But at the same time, they're like, well, you know what? Yeah, we've got these Democrat donors that are Jewish people that love the nation of Israel. I don't know how they play it either, Jeff, and it does get us in a tough spot if we have feckless leaders, and you see that. I mean, this administration, we had peace through strength when Trump was in office. And so he's the only president in the last 4 or 5 that hadn't got us in a war somewhere. And yet the economy is thriving, and somehow Biden's struggling. The economy's not doing too well. We've got wars all over the place. And when I start seeing these drones, these 136 drones that are assembled in Iran, but they've got components from China, and they're actually being used in Russia, fired on Ukraine, it's an anti-American movement where our adversaries are all working together, and we're trying to fight three fronts, a war and a wide open border here. I just don't know that this administration is equipped to handle anything, especially if it escalates.
Congressman, two things I want to get to here before we run out of time. I was at the State House in Montgomery yesterday, and I was talking to one of the lawmakers there, and he's a farmer as well. And you're in this business, but he's telling me that, look, man, the cost of farming, row crops, it's getting out of hand. He blames the Biden administration for some of these green policies. And if you think about it, I mean, the institutional left is wanting us to eat lab-grown meat and bugs, and it does look as if there's this push to get away from farming. But what he says is the Biden administration and its policies to try to eco-fi everything, the green movement, he thinks is why input costs are going up and making it harder to be a farmer. It's just the net outcome, Congressman, is going to be, you think grocery prices are high now, you just wait. They're going to escalate. You're sort of in this space, and you represent a very ag-centric part of your district now. What do you think is going on here? Do you see that phenomenon?
Yeah, I could very well see that. And the hearings I've had within the district, you know, and I did a lot of ag here in farm roundtables, and the input cost is so higher than many of these guys budgeted for, Jeff, because of fuel and fertilizer. And like you said, every time we print a dollar in D.C., it just crushes the buying power of the American farmer, the business owner, even the individual consumers, because we're just creating inflation by printing dollars, and you get all these dollars start chasing these fewer goods. But this supply and demand curve where these farmers, this input cost is so high that when they get their products out of the ground and they get them sold, they get them moved to market, there's nothing left, or either there's not enough left to cover the debt, and then they have trouble getting loans to operate next couple of years. Man, when that supply starts to dwindle and those producers start to disappear, you talk about inflation in groceries, you could very well see that. And you couple that with Biden's energy policies where diesel is used to put $250 a day to fill your tractor, $760 a day, for the same tractor doing the same job. These guys budgeted years ago or months ago. They've already trying to buy their diesel. They're trying to buy the seed. They're trying to put it in the ground in the weather. These reference prices to try to help bring that up, our reference prices not keeping up with inflation. And look, out here in the real world in business, you and I can adjust our prices yesterday. If we see that our fuel, our input costs, our raw goods are going up, then the cost of goods goes up. We can raise our price, but these farmers are not in that position. They're stuck in commodity markets where they're having to pay input costs, whatever that case may be, with no ability to adjust on the back end, and it has caught them in a tough spot. So the next few years, if we don't, we're trying, I've been talking to Ag and some of the members on the committee and the chairman, we need to come up with some sort of emergency funding to help them bridge this gap until we can get these reference prices adjusted so these guys can produce next year and the year after, so we don't see this inflationary pressure where there's no supply and there's demands that are going to be there because the American people do like to eat.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, it's not hard to see that grocery prices are going to, I mean, they're bad now, but potentially they could go just off the charts here soon.
Yeah, and it's terrifying to me that the Biden administration and these crowd of D.C. bureaucrats don't even want you to have a garden anymore. It's like, oh, you got to get a permit to that, or you got to do this, or you can't catch rainwater to use your garden. Man, the insanity that we're seeing now is incredible. They want you so dependent on them, yet they are so unqualified to operate this government and this budget and this system of capitalism, because none of them really believe in it, I don't think.
Last question we get you out of here on this, and this we talked about this last week. We kind of ran out of time, but the Save Our Shrimpers Act, it's got a little tension down here, and I think primarily from a lot of people who are kind of, especially the coastal area, that we're kind of waiting to see, you know, if you were going to address some of these coastal Alabama issues. But you've gotten on board with this. Talk about that once again, if you would.
Yeah, it goes back to food security, man. We can't allow these foreign countries to dump their products into our markets, because of what they do, and again, it goes back to supply and demand. They'll flood the markets with a product. They'll put your local producers out, and then when they gather that market, when they start to consolidate that market and there's no competition, we'll see those prices go through the roof. And, oh, by the way, if we're buying all this foreign seafood and these products from around the world, man, at some point they may decide not to be our friend anymore. And so we need to keep those folks, local American jobs producing, so therefore we have this food security. It goes back to food security, Jeff, but also allow these folks not to put our producers out of business, because down the road that will come back to bite us. And so a lot of the producing, whether it's ag, offshore, seafood, you name it, anything that we're producing now is getting a lot of pressure from this administration and certainly the foreign governments. They all want to be in our market. The problem is once they consolidate and they kind of control the market, then that's when the prices start going back through the roof. So they don't mind doing a little loss leader to start with to put us all out of business. And then, oh, by the way, once we're dependent on them, they've got us over a barrel. These industries can't ramp back up. And so many of these are family-owned businesses, whether it be ag or shrimpers or whatever the case may be. And so we're trying to protect those from just this stuff being flooded in our market, dumped in our markets, and putting them out of business.
Congressman, we always appreciate your time. We got to leave it there, but glad we could do this once again. Let's do it again soon.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
All right, guys, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.